Hey everyone, welcome to the New Insight podcast, where we interview the most important movers and shakers in ophthalmology and give you new insights on the innovations ahead. I'm your host, Viral Sheth. My guest today is George McGrath. If you've been listening to industry news recently, you know that Dr. McGrath was recently named CEO of Ocufire Pharma, a small company that has been making big news over the past year. In our conversation, we discuss George's background, including how his background as a board-certified ophthalmologist and his experience as CEO of Lexitas Pharmaceutical Services have helped shape his career and have gotten him to where he is today. We start our conversation discussing a little bit about the history of Ocufire and their recent approval of Ryzumvi, used to reverse pharmacologically induced mydriasis or dilation that we often perform in clinic. We then pivot and focus primarily around Ocufire's lead retinal product candidate, APX3330, an oral medication which they're developing to treat non-proliferative diabetic retinopathy. What I'm most impressed about was to see how much Ocufire and Dr. McGrath's team have achieved in a short period of time with a fairly small but really high-powered, high-functioning team. I'm thrilled to be able to give our listeners some new insights from a true leader in our field. So without further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Dr. George McGrath. So George, thanks for being here today. I'm really excited about having you on the show. You know, you and the Ocufire team have been working just kind of at an amazing pace and getting an amazing amount of work done and trials wrapped up and treatments approved. And I think, you know, I really want to have this discussion to allow for the retina community to kind of better understand what Ocufire is doing. And you know what your role is in the company and how you're kind of shepherding kind of the next chapter of what happens at the company. And so I'd love to kind of start there. Maybe let's talk a little bit about Ocufire itself first, you know, because the company hasn't been around for that long, especially when we look in the grand scheme of retina. And so the question is, you know, how did Ocufire come to be? Where did you start and where are you in 2023 compared to kind of where you maybe started and where you saw yourself going initially?
Yeah. Well, it's perfect timing for this question because Ocufire is just pivoting to retina as our primary focus. So you hit the nail on the head, right? The team is amazing. They were incredibly efficient and productive at, I think, seven or so clinical trials with the anterior segment product that led up to its approval within only a handful of years. And so they just kept producing study after study and hitting endpoint after endpoint. And it was quite impressive. And that led to Ryzumvi, which is the phentolamine eye drop, being approved for the reversal of mydriasis. And just prior to that approval, we partnered it with Viatris, right? Because Viatris is certainly has a great team to commercialize ophthalmic products now, particularly for anterior segment with their work they're doing with Jeff Now and the Oyster Point team. And so it made a lot of sense for us to fold Ryzumvi in with them and allow them to commercialize it. And that allowed us to pivot to what we think is really the transformational opportunity that we have, which is with our retina product. And so now we have shifted to be 100% a total retina company, where we're going after diabetic retinopathy, which is, you know, the largest remaining indication in retina that's completely sort of untouched right now. So
yeah, and so
that's why I'm here.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that retina product, yeah, in particular APX3330, which is really exciting and something I definitely want to dig into. You know, you guys, I think one of the neat things about what you've accomplished is, you know, in 2018 you were founded, and you know, that's not a long time ago. It's about 5 years ago, and not just that, we had a pandemic in the middle of all that. And even then, you guys were able to execute on multiple studies and show kind of positive top-line data and you know, get the anterior segment product approved, and now really kind of, like you said, pivoting and focusing on the retinal indications. And so, you know, tell us a little bit about the team. You know, it's not a very, very big team, but it's, like you said, I think a very efficient team and a very high-functioning team. So tell us a little bit about that and kind of how that's developed over the last few years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the team is very high functioning, as you mentioned, and you have to have that, right? You have to have great science. You have to have a patient need, like an indication with a patient need, and you have to have a great team to execute it. And I think we have all three of those, particularly for the retina. the team is small but mighty, right? So we are a small team, but it is high functioning, and it really is capstoned by you know, true leaders in their field, right? So our clinical team with Barb and Dre and Mitch and Laura and others is really an expert at running clinical studies, right? And they've actually came, a lot of the team was together at a company doing a Tie-2 activation for DR prior to coming to Ocufire. And so they have not just the anterior segment experience they execute against, but they actually have true DR experience. The CMC team is amazing as well, along with the non-clinical and our research team. And so it really, it all has to, it all kind of comes back to everybody aligning and swimming in the same direction. And we spend a lot of time making sure that as a leadership team, that we're all pointing everybody in the right direction as they execute in their discipline, right? So we want the people doing the manufacturing to truly understand what the clinical people are doing and needing. And that's how you stay off of critical paths, right? So that's how I think the team has been able to function as fast as they have without having delays that jam everything up by being open, transparent, and accountable with each other.
Yeah, no, and I think just working with a lot of the folks on your team, I there's no doubt about it. I mean, they're kind of the best in the business, and I think it's, you know, it's playing out in what you guys have accomplished in that short period of time. So before we kind of look ahead, you know, maybe to 2024 and maybe some of what the data has allowed you to kind of open up for DR, let's talk a little bit about the past. And in your past in particular, you were formerly CEO, I think, of Lexitas. Mm-hmm. And so tell us a little bit about your journey and how you ended up here today in this podcast.
Yeah. Well, my journey has been a winding journey, but the tie that, you know, the thread that ties it all together is truly that I always look for high functioning teams with good science with a need, right? And so I'm an ophthalmologist. I did my fellowship at Wills Eye Institute. I treated patients in retina and ocular oncology, medical retina and ocular oncology. I don't do vitreoretinal surgery, but I did that for, I've done that for a long time now, 12 years or so. And in the interim, I also ended up getting a degree in economics, a degree in business administration, things like that, that led to me being an equity analyst for a little while in New York. And so I did that for a couple of years, spent a small stint at a hedge fund before I fell in love with a product that was a topical minocycline that was being developed by a woman named Carla Vazon, who's now a catalyst at a company called Hovione, which was a Portuguese contract drug manufacturer. And so I ended up working with their team, and we had a small team of six people that was responsible for taking all of their proprietary products out of their 1,200 or so chemists that worked at the company and developing them. And we had projects in inhalation, dermatology, and ophthalmology. It was fantastic. It was a lot of fun. It was another high functioning team. And I ran a lot of studies over a 7-year period with Lexitas. They were our service provider. And so as we started as we got to phase three and we started, you know, trying to license a lot of our products from Hovione, and we had progressed them through the life cycle of truly ideation and concept all the way through to viable phase three products. It was a nice transition point, right? And so I was able to move over to Lexitas, and I became CEO of Lexitas, and we grew Lexitas from 35 people to about 200 people. And we really did that off of the back of retina. So we were 75% of our studies were retina studies. And we did it. We did it based off relationships and just hard work, right? I mean, it really was just trying to do our best to execute clinical studies as on time, efficiently, scientifically sound. You know, we just had a fantastic team there that did that. And we grew the company to just under 200 people, transacted it, sold it to a company called QHP Capital. And it provided an opportunity for me to look around at what's next for my life, right? And so spent 15 months doing the integration and transition and things like that. And the Occufire team brought us the Zeta One data to sort of look at and get our opinion on. And so I'd seen their data, I knew their science, and I certainly knew their team. And so once the FDA agreed to the three-step worsening on the binocular DRSS scale, it became an awesome opportunity for me to join the company. And so I joined November 1st, you know, right after the FDA, the end of phase two meeting. And truly, you know, my mission here is pretty clear, right? I'm here to run the retina programs. And so that's what we're doing. And so it's full steam ahead on that. So it's an exciting time.
Good, good. So listen, so you kind of teased the idea of the Zeta One trial and the APX3330. So I think this is probably the best time to talk about that. So tell us a little bit about the molecule and what, you know, one, how it functions, because it definitely is a different mechanism of action than I think we're used to as retina specialists. So I think that's important to highlight. But also, you know, you kind of mentioned the DRSS score and what potentially the endpoints are there. So let's talk a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's really an elegant molecule, right? It's a small molecule. It's an inhibitor of REF1. And so REF1 is the modulator of angiogenesis in inflammation, right? Is a modulator of it. And so what you get when you inhibit REF1 is you decrease inflammation and you take angiogenesis, you take VEGF back to physiologic levels. So it's elegant because it's a little different, right? Because we could never give Avastin systemically for DR, right? Or any of the other VEGFs, because if you deplete systemic VEGF, you get side effects, right?
And other issues
that we're used to. Mm-hmm. But when you decrease it to physiologic levels, you don't get those. And this is, APX has now been in, I think, 12 studies over multiple different indications, right, outside of ophthalmology. And it's a safe and well-tolerated drug in those studies. And that's what we saw in Zeta 1 was that it is safe and tolerable, which is the first criteria you have to have for an oral in ophthalmics, right, is that it has to be safe and tolerable. The second thing is really around the mechanism. And so decreasing that VEGF from an elevated state in diabetics back to a physiologic state really does impact pathology. And we've shown that in a number of different animal models and now in humans, right, with Zeta 1, that is a meaningful decrease in VEGF. And the inflammation aspect of it too is really interesting to tie those together. We all know, you know this as a clinician, right? You typically treat your diabetics with anti-angiogenics. And if that doesn't get you where you want to be, you add on a steroid, because all diabetics are somewhere on this continuum of needing of vascular permeability or inflammation, right? And so the ability to modulate both of those with a single compound is really, really appealing. And so we really have an elegant molecule that appears to be safe and well tolerated, that has a novel mechanism to go after known implicated factors or actors in the pathology, and through an oral route. And that gets to the binocular scale, right? So oral is super interesting because in diabetic retinopathy, where we're coming at it from, you know, on the more milder side, right? These are asymptomatic patients, working age adults in their 30s, 40s, you know, something like that, who have diabetic retinopathy and are at risk for progressing to vision loss, but have not yet lost any vision. And so the ability to take a tablet is really appealing to modify the disease. Honestly, I really do think that this is analogous to having to a statin, right? Or
treating high blood pressure, right? Those people with high cholesterol or high blood pressure are asymptomatic until they have a heart attack or a stroke. People with diabetic retinopathy are asymptomatic until they have a vitreous hemorrhage or diabetic macular edema. And so it really is the right time to treat patients, you know, while they're asymptomatic before they've lost vision. So it's really a needed thing, you know.
You know better than anybody, right? As a retina physician, you know, we've had ways of treating diabetic retinopathy, especially, you know, without diabetic macular edema. We've had these options available to us and we haven't really used them in mass because, you know, having to do injections and the frequency mm-hmm. and the follow-up and all those things make it really tricky for patients in particular. Mm-hmm. We want to, right? In an ideal world where everything lined up well, we would be doing these things regularly mm-hmm. because we know, to your point, all it takes is you just have to see a handful of these patients, you know, fall off that cliff, right? Whether they develop a vitreous hemorrhage or macular edema or even worse, a diabetic TRD, right? Mm-hmm. And it happens, right? We know that if we have ways of potentially preventing that or lowering the likelihood of that, you know, we should be considering them. But I think the biggest hurdle thus far has been, again, like you said, the route that we've had to use, which is the injections and the frequency. And so I think, you know, this disease in particular, NPDR and potentially, you know, proliferative diabetic retinopathy are really great targets for this type of a medication, this type of a mechanism of action. And so we're excited about it, you know, in terms of, hey, this probably makes the most sense in terms of how we would treat this in this patient population. And so it's great. I applaud you because I think it's something that where there's a huge unmet need and this is something that could potentially fill that need. So then the question really is, well, let's look ahead. So we know we were happy with the results of Zeta 1. We know the FDA has kind of given some guidance on it. Tell us a little bit about 2024 and how that lines up for you and the team and what the plan is moving forward.
Yeah, so the plan is full steam ahead, right? So we've got a lot of activities we need to do to get ready for the phase 3 program, which will be, you know, a big program like all retina phase 3s are. It's going to be two studies and really following patients for a year after that to see the change in the DRSS. And so for our team, it's really heads down just working as hard as we can to get ready for those, to have the drug product in place, to have the clinical protocol in place, to have all of the different aspects that are required for that in place. So right now we're putting in all the prep work. And the other thing that we're doing is we're spending a lot of time thinking about what is the patient's journey, right? So these patients, typically if they're asymptomatic DR patients, they might not always be sitting in the retina practice. They might be sitting in the optometrist practice. They might be at the primary care doctor without knowing it, right? Knowing they have the disease. They might be a general ophthalmology. How do you really find these patients that would be the right patients to treat and get them to the retina doctors who will be the investigators on the trial? And so we're thinking hard about that and how we can possibly use, you know, different community cameras that can be hooked up with AI type evaluation of DRSS. You know, iNook is the one that comes to mind that's the furthest along with that, but there are others as well. You know, how do we sort of mobilize some of these technologies to give us a leg up on getting the right patients to the trial at the right time?
Yeah, and that's important. I mean, because we have, like you said, probably a lot of these patients that could benefit from these treatments that are just not in our clinics yet. I think the analogous kind of what we're seeing today is the geographic atrophy patients, right? We finally have treatments for these patients, but a lot of them still haven't gotten to us yet because, you know, some of them are asymptomatic or some of them are still, you know, at kind of referring providers' offices that really don't know yet that we have great treatments and or potentially mm-hmm. options for these patients. And so I think I applaud you on this because that's, you know, something that we don't want. We don't want this treatment to become available. Then all of a sudden, now we're trying to figure out, hey, how do we actually, you know, create awareness of this? You're kind of leading that ahead of the development or in parallel with the development, I should say. And that's important, I think. So that's fantastic. I mean, I think it's a great story so far. And I think what, you know, the goal is of today's conversation is really to make sure people understand kind of what's going on. People understand, look, we still have a ton of unmet needs in retina, and people like you and the team are working on addressing some of these things. And so I think just creating that awareness about what you guys are working on is important. And from my standpoint, really looking forward to kind of what comes next, you know, watching the phase three unfold and hopefully kind of seeing the data and watching, you know, patients benefit ultimately at the end.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what it's all about. And it's a privilege to be a part of a program like this, and really, really a lot of hard work going into it. So it's going to be fun to watch.
Good. George, I want to thank you for your time. This has been great. I think, again, really informative. Looking forward to part two when we kind of get some updates from you guys down the road. But until then, like you said, head down and keep up the great work.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Thank you for listening in to the New Insight Podcast. We really appreciate your time. Be sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred listening or watching platform. And if you're interested in more ophthalmology news or other podcasts, visit hcplive.com and check out our offerings. For now, I'm Dr. Viral Sheth. Hope to see you next time to discuss what's new in sight.